Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today's episode is an awesome episode. I happen to be a guest on Kirk Kinsey's show. Kirk was a guest here on the 343 Podcast many a times, and he invited me over to discuss a few matters, but I think what was most prominent is more derived towards the parents. It's, hey, parents, how can you best assess a club and make sure that you're making good decisions for your children in selecting a club and selecting a team? And in, I mean, kind of in a direct way as well, kind of selecting the coach that your kid is going to be playing for. Of course, the discussion veers off into tangential and pertinent, relevant topics as well. So you don't want to miss those things. But perhaps the most important thing of them all, I didn't even drop an F-bomb. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Yours truly used no profanity. Actually, I take that back. I think there may have been one instance, but one instance only in an hour-long conversation. That's a record, and I hope it goes to show that when I'm in somebody else's house, when it's appropriate, I am very respectful. I can be very diplomatic. I can be very professional. So maybe it'll be a breath of fresh air for some of you out there. Before we get into it, per usual, what sponsors this podcast is nobody from the outside. We sponsor ourselves. We fund it ourselves. And yes, it does take time, energy, money, effort to produce this podcast, especially on a weekly or biweekly basis. How do we do that? Well, we offer outlier level, unique coaching education. You will not find this anywhere else in the marketplace. So coaches, head on over to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. I swear to God, you need to hop on board ASAP because you're just wasting your time out there in the marketplace not hopping on board to the 343 premium program. And parents, you guys are also coaches, believe it or not. Even if it's not showing your kid how to kick a ball or what a tactical formation looks like in a low block, mid block, or high block, all those soccer-specific things, yes, that's coaching. But even if you're not doing that, you're coaching your kids on the mental side of the equation. But if you had both, the tactical, and the mental side, well, gosh, you're going to hit a home run. And for that, we help you out at 343masterclass.com. Parents, go to 343masterclass.com. Last but certainly not least, if you happen to be coaching in the 7-versus-7 format, i.e. for the little ones, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, there are gold nuggets galore in this one. Kirk, thank you again for having me on your show and allowing me to repost this on our side as well. Here we go.
Hello and welcome to the PFA Podcast. I am your host, Kirk Kinsey. I'm joined by a special guest today. Peter is out in Europe, so he's not on, but one of the things that we've wanted to do here on the show is have guests come in and fill in those gaps and, quite frankly, bigger experts than me or Peter. Today's guest is Gary Kleiben, who runs the 343 coaching platform. There's a 343 player masterclass. Gary is kind of my introduction to positional play when I started coaching. And over the years, we've exchanged emails and podcasts and different things. He's a great resource and kind of what I would just call a thought leader in U.S. soccer and an important voice. Gary, I hope that's enough, but welcome to the show. Thanks for joining.
More than enough, Kirk. Very flattering. I appreciate you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to having this discussion. It sounds like you have a new enterprise, and I've learned a lot from you over the years, you know, kind of from the shadows and me being a little bit of a lurker. As well, the work that you did previous to this new thing, in my opinion, is quite remarkable. And I think you know that because I've said so publicly many a times.
Oh,
so,
yeah. No, we've clipped it and we've shared.
Oh, okay, cool.
No, I always appreciate that. I was walking my dog listening to one of the episodes one time, and it was weird to hear my name come up kind of in passing, but I appreciate the kind words. So I can kind of set the table here. The last time we spoke, Gary, I was running a club called Flagstaff Revolution. It was kind of a grassroots thing. We meaning my teams, kind of outgrew that and were looking for something a little bit more. We were looking for a club with a good fit, which is kind of where I wanted to have the discussion today on looking for good clubs. I had met the club director, Julian Dragomir, a couple years ago, and very similar philosophy. He had left a big box club to start Playmaker Football Academy. Positional play, very strict positional play. He had played in Europe for a few years. And so he kind of a different mindset than a lot of what you find in American soccer. And he and I just hit it off. And so when it came time for me to look for something new, Julian was just super helpful. What do you need? Tell me what you want to do and we'll do it. And so now we kind of have, I don't like to call us a satellite club because we're part of the main mothership down in Scottsdale. We have teams up here in Flagstaff, which for those who don't know is about 2 hours north of Phoenix. But same methodology. And so it's been a great fit. They've opened up a lot of opportunities for our boys in terms of playing in higher leagues, playing with higher level teams, training in higher level formats with their teams down there. So it's been a great fit. All that is from the coaching side and like why I chose to come to PFA and why we're doing this thing here. But the first question I had, because we're in tryout season, right? And parents are always asking, well, what do I look for in a club? Or, you know, oftentimes I'm trying to tell them, you shouldn't be impressed by X, Y, or Z with club A, B, or C. So Gary, if setting aside the fact that we don't have pro rel, that we don't have first teams where all these kids can go, and just dealing with the reality on the ground, what would you, if it was your kid, be looking for in a club? From, and at, you can go top to bottom, you can go style of play, culture, whatever you want.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I would say generally speaking, a club has its stuff together and is potentially a good club. If there's unifying principles across all its teams, and it's not a club that is just a transactional club, is just a club that's operating a business whereby they'll just accept any old player because it's an added customer and has a whole bunch of teams with disparate philosophies and coaches who don't really talk to each other and a club director that's a little bit unavailable, you know, with respect to the coaches and the players and the different teams. So unity, first and foremost. And then from the sporting side of the equation, which is obviously related. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty well known that I'm a pretty big believer in what the world-class coaches and the world-class clubs also believe in, which is if you dominate possession, dominate the ball more so than the other team, that gives you, one, a higher probability of winning. But if we're talking about at the youth level, it gives you a much higher probability of developing your players as well. Yeah. Because if you have a possession-based philosophy, then that means the game is not chaotic. Mm-hmm. There's more structure, more organization. When a player receives a ball, they're going to have more time and space and a mental model as to what to do next versus absolutely no model whatsoever. And it's complete improvisation from that point forward. And that enables you for the player to be more successful, right? And have more touches on the ball, which is what you need, and have more successful execution of passes and have better decision-making processes in your mind, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we can go on for quite a bit with this, Kirk, but that's basically the foundation of what I would be looking at. If I bump into a club where I see their teams playing kickball constantly all the time, and I see a club that doesn't have this unifying principle, then I'm probably going to be a little turned off. I'll be like, I'm not so sure they have their stuff in order.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of like talking to myself in some ways. For me, that's why positional play is so important, is because all those foundational skills that you get training in that sort of system are what set players up for success later. So you talked about first touch. And it's interesting because I had a conversation with a parent not too long ago from another club, and they're asking, well, I don't, you know, you're doing so many rondos, and this is, you know, the kids don't like it when they train at it with our club, and they don't even have a good first touch anyway. So like, let's focus on the little things first. And I like had to push back, like, hey, what do you think a rondo trains? Like, if I put a kid in a 4v2 and give him a two touch limit, what do you think that first touch has to look like? Because that second touch has to be a pass. So that's like, I feel like people have such a limited view on what it is. It's not their fault. It's just something that's foreign and something that I think in the last 3 or 4 years has become less suppressed. But, you know, when I was going through U.S. coaching licenses 5 or 6 years ago, it was like, if you showed up with a rondo as part of your assignment, you would fail. Because you'd be like, well, this isn't game-like. There's neutrals. This isn't game-like. There's no goal. So I don't know. Have you noticed that cultural shift or that pretended cultural shift, I guess?
Yeah, I think it has been a little bit. There isn't so much the antagonism towards rondos and so much antagonism towards possession-based play in the past 4 or 5 years, as you said. I think some of that has to do with, I mean, when the whole, so we have to go back a little bit further, right? When Pep's Barcelona, when Spain, you know, illustrated the gold standard at the very, very top of the food chain. And then at the youth level, you know, kind of my brother Brian came on the stage and we had a huge social media presence, a huge public presence. And he was deploying the same sorts of things that Barcelona and Spain were eliciting. And then Caleb Porter, you know, at Akron did exceptional work. And then Tata Martino at Atlanta did exceptional work when the Atlanta MLS franchise first launched. So the whole rondo / possession crashed on the shores of America in a very poignant and short window of time. And it was such a foreign concept back then to the entrenched establishment in our country that there was an immune response, so to speak, from the American culture, soccer culture, mainstream soccer culture. And so they fought it. They fought it. And it seems to, I think, have subsided a bit, not because they won, not because we won, just because their fear maybe has kind of dwindled, that their jobs weren't going to be taken from them, or God knows what their fear-based response was all about. But I think that's my opinion as to why it kind of has subsided and you don't see that anti-rondo thing anymore. Right.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it's caught on. It's a bit trendy. Every club now says that they are training positional play. And I like that. I like that we're moving in that direction. I also realize that we have a long way to go before it's actually implemented right. We had a league match against one of the biggest clubs in Arizona is Arizona Arsenal. And we had a league match against their pre-ECNL team. And I'd love to get your take on some of these leagues. But now teams are designating, you know, if they're U-12s, they're pre-ECNL. We're going next year. Get your kids on board now. Like, let's get them all signed up. And maybe he'll have a shot at the ECNL team next year. And so we're playing this team. Well, we're warming up. And I'm just curious, like, what are they doing? Who's this coach? You know, they're charging kids $4,000 or $5,000 a year. What are they getting for that? And I look over and there is this warm-up exercise that they're doing, and it's probably, I don't know, 30 by 40 yards. And there are neutral players all the way around. There's probably, I don't know, there's probably 6 or 7, maybe even 8 neutrals. And the kids are playing 3-on-3 in the middle with all these neutrals. Looks like a rondo, kind of. And if I steel man that one, it's like, okay, well, they're playing midfield against midfield. But what really happened is you have little 1v1s showing up everywhere, right? One of the kids, one of the three in the middle, is going at his guy and just creating a 2v1 with somebody on the outside. There's no combination of the midfield. There's no swing the ball from one side to the other. It was just all very, very 1v1 and 2v1 focus. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this is one of the biggest clubs in Arizona, and this coach doesn't know how to run what he says he's running. And next year they're going to go to this league, and, you know, they've acquired a lot of talent because, again, they're the biggest and they have this league moniker. But, like, this coach doesn't know what he's doing. We beat that team 4-1, dominated possession of the ball, took him to pieces. Coach was kind of a jerk afterward. Whatever, it's fine. Like, people get heated. But it was just this weird experience of a lot of things crashing down for me that even I, who am like a total skeptic about any big box club or what other clubs are doing, it was kind of like this moment where, like, man, these guys really don't have anything. And that all that mystique just washed away. I don't know where I'm going with that, Gary, but just this idea of people misapplying it and not really understanding what they're doing.
Where my head went was maybe, and especially parents, right? But maybe you were a little bit impressed, maybe because of the name of the club,
yeah,
right? And the pedigree associated with that. And just humans, I think, are hardwired to kind of give that a lot of credence.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, we're running up against this club. So you think A, and then you as a practitioner, as an expert in the field, go and witness B, and you're like, it breaks your brain at that point. And I think this is a good lesson, a very important lesson for parents, especially parents who are just starting out on this journey, but everybody's susceptible to this, is the pedigree thing, the badge thing, the credential thing will lead you down It will misguide you. I promise you, it will misguide you. And one of the things to consider also, to understand, and this is a deep rabbit hole, but I'll keep it high level.
Let's go. Let's chase it.
So what that pedigree enables a club like that to do is to get away with a bunch of low-level nonsense, mediocrity, no pursuit of excellence, because they already have the status, right? They're this type of club that it was allowed to compete in a certain type of league, be it ECNL or MLS Next or whatever. And once you have that rubber stamp, you have a whole bunch of freedom to not be good because you don't have to be good, because the badge will already recruit the players from wherever they happen to be in the region. So that's a word of caution, especially for parents out there. That is what, generally speaking, you're going to get when you go to those places. Yeah. So they're not looking for the best coaches, and the coaches there aren't looking to become the best that they can be necessarily, because it's all done. They've made it. Versus a club that's on the outside looking in. Well, you have to differentiate yourself somehow, because you don't have the rubber stamp of the league patch. And so what are the incentives now for that smaller club or that mid-sized club or that club that just simply has not been admitted yet or whatever? The incentive is to differentiate yourself and be the best that you can be at this thing that we call soccer. That's been my experience.
No, I think you're 100% right on that. And it's this idea that the big badge and the big league recruits, quote unquote, the best players, right? I think you and I would really quibble with what that designation is on the best players. But the physical, maybe overly physical, really quick and powerful and oftentimes technical, I'm not going to lie, like they're technical 1v1, but they look like they're a six-year-old out there where they have the ball and they don't see anything else on the field. And they have a couple of gifts that oftentimes are God-given and sometimes are things that they've developed. They have a wicked step over that gets by every defender in the U13 bracket, whatever it is. And so they beat people, and there's a lot of confirmation bias there. And so parents join this big club. Oh, my kid plays ECNL. Oh, my kid plays MLS Next. We won this game. We went up against this academy team and we won. But ultimately, in 5 years, that kid has had a lot of good experiences, won a lot of games in quote unquote high leagues, but they're not going anywhere because they have zero understanding of the game. And that goes back to what you were talking about. Like, you have to train them in a positional play model so that they understand the game from a young age, right? And so that they, when they go to the next level, be it college, which is better and better all the time with more foreign players coming in, quite frankly, right? Or whether they go pro, they have to have that stuff. And it goes all the way back to, can they play in a 4v2? Can they receive the ball, like ball across their body so their body position is right? Can they take a directional first touch away from pressure? Do they even understand what that is? And a lot of times it's no, right? And so you have all these players who max out in high school because high school soccer is their goal, right? Oh, I want to play varsity soccer. I want to compete for a state championship in high school soccer. And it's like, that's 2.5 months out of your year in high school, right? For 4 years. Like, we need to aim higher. We need to do something different. And so I don't know. I feel like the whole, like all the youth soccer clubs are so misaligned. And again, going back to PFA is something that wasn't the case when I got here. It was like, no, we're going to put kids in academies. We're going to train this way. We're going to compete in whatever league will take us. And so like inside our club, even there's like internal promotion and relegation. So like my 2012s are the second strongest team in the club. And even though we're geographically isolated, the top 2012s are getting ECNL next year, and my kids are playing E64 National League. And like, it caused some problems down at Scottsdale. And the director was like, don't care. Like, the best team is going to the best league or whatever. So that's something that I appreciated there too, as well. But
yeah. Got it. So the club that you're a part of, they are an ECNL club.
Yeah. So they just, well, it's ECNL RL for this year. So
got it.
PFA started about the same time that I started Flagstaff Revolution. So it's only 6 or 7 years old. So ECNL RL for this year, and everybody's all in on trying to get the full designation for next year. But they kept the E64 teams as well.
Got it.
And again, best team gets it. Doesn't matter if they're in Flagstaff or, I don't know, Santa
Fe. I love
that.
I love that, man. Yeah. I love that. How many teams does the club have in total? Curious.
You know what? For next year, I'm not totally sure. It's about 20 to 25. And then we have two teams in Flagstaff. We're going to have four next year.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it also from the player side with these big clubs. The player profile that they have and what their trajectories kind of look like. They get the physical kids. They get the kids that are pretty high up there on the capability spectrum at that particular early age. And it's not a consequence of them developing those players. They come to them already kind of developed in a certain respect. And then, you know, you get a roster full of those players and you're going to win games just by default. You could have the worst coaching. You could have the worst club philosophy on earth. But if you roll out a roster that has that sort of strength, you're going to have a good win-loss column.
Go watch the English Championship.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's a virtuous cycle for them, right?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
They win and then, okay, they recruit more and they win, they recruit more and so on and so forth. But it doesn't mean that the kid is developing principally from a tactical perspective.
Yeah.
And from a technical perspective, if I'm being sincere, they aren't really developing either unless the coach is doing all of this sort of rondo type methodology or a methodology that is equivalent to that. But I have not come across, a methodology that is as good in developing players from a technical perspective. I haven't seen it. So if I would, I would tell you. No, seriously. So they're developing, quote unquote, technically deficient players, tactically deficient players. And then the mentality side of the equation is a whole other can of worms. But sometimes I've seen so many cycles, Kirk, that the top players in these clubs, they're very successful during their youth because they're starters. They play every game. They get all the accolades. They might even get called up to like youth national team ID camps or even youth national teams, period. And then when they graduate to the next level, be it college, or be it maybe some sort of pro environment, and they aren't the top dog anymore, right? Yeah. They're not starting. They're on the bench, and they find themselves in unknown waters at that point because they don't know how to be being that second choice or that third choice. And so they end up folding and crumbling many a times. I've seen it not just with many of our personal players and experiences, but across the board and across the country. And so from a club perspective, I'd be looking at, that's a hard one to develop. I'll admit it's very difficult, but I'd be looking at a club that maybe is cognizant of these things and maybe tries to do something about it. For example, parent education.
Yeah.
Hey parents, this is what's coming later, right? So if you start now in your home environment, trying to instill these sorts of habits and this sort of mentality in your son or daughter, then you might be positioning them better than if you weren't doing X, Y, or Z.
Yeah. I've a good segue there, I think, because I did want to talk about home environment and individual player training and everything. But there's a kid on my 2010 boys, which is the group that I started with when I first started coaching competitively like this. His older sister was a great player, belonged to another club here in Flag, the only one that was here for 40 years or so. She was like expressing her desire, probably 13 or 14. I want to go to college. I want to play Division I, want to do this. How do I get there? And the club just kept telling her, nobody's interested in you. Like straight up, nobody's interested in you. So they were putting up barriers, right? They were just unintentionally gatekeeping one of their stronger players. And their family had the gumption, the cojones, whatever you want to call it, right? And the know-how to be like, you know what? No, we're done. And they drove her to Phoenix 3 or 4 times a week so she could go join a legit club down there that was going to get her seen. She ended up getting a Division I scholarship by the time she graduated. It was actually for NAU here in Flagstaff, and the coaching staff told her if she would have stayed in Flagstaff, they wouldn't have given her a second look, right? And so here is this club saying, no, you got to stay with us. When the time comes, when people are interested, we're going to let you know. We're going to let you, again, gatekeeping the exits, right? Mm-hmm. And the family just said, nah, forget you guys. We're going to do it our own way, we love doing it our own way, right? So not every family is well equipped like that. Not every family can drive their kid 2 hours to Phoenix 3 times a week. Not every family, again, has the cojones to be like, no, we're done. We're leaving this club. Mysteriously enough, as soon as they left, they were like, oh, you know what? We are starting to get phone calls about her. So let's work on a discovery program or something. You know, let's get you back. Because again, it's transactional, like you said earlier, right? But I'd love to get your take. Again, I share your 5 components article with every single parent that I come across. It's part of my parent, like in my first meeting with every team, that article is there. And I'd love for you to riff a little bit on household influence and what parents can do to build a culture at home that supports it.
Yeah. Oh boy. Okay. So let me try to situate myself again with the 5 components and the audience, if you don't mind. So I wrote, the 5 are, so we've got the household, parent, family influence, the pickup game influence, so just playing pickup games, the playing on your own influence. So I don't know, maybe you got the ball, you take it in your backyard, your front yard, or a park, and you're just juggling by yourself or dribbling by yourself or just kicking against the wall by yourself. And then you've got the personal training influence, and then you finally have the club team influence. So all of those are critically important, in my opinion. If you can, obviously, let's go to the extremes. If you can maximize, you know, every single one of those, you're on your way to absolutely fulfilling your potential.
Yeah.
If you're a zero in any one of those, you're probably in some trouble.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't be a zero. And over the course of time, I started recognizing more and more that the home environment is fundamental. Mm-hmm. And there's always a variety of players that end up being very successful and their home environment is not great. And you would say that's not conducive to player development and long-term success. But I think it's important for us to put the exceptions aside, right? And say, okay, listen, the general rule is kind of this. So I would say 90%+ of the time, you need parents that are, one, supportive, obviously. So whatever, whatever that means, travel, whatever. But I'm more interested in having the child develop great habits and responsibility and discipline, commitment, grit, always looking at yourself as the first one for being at fault instead of pointing the finger at others, point the thumb at yourself and say, I need to change. I need to do better. I can control my own situation versus that coach doesn't like me or that club isn't any good or, you know, it doesn't make sense that I'm, you know, I'm not playing these many minutes over the weekend or that sort of stuff. So I think the parents should reinforce that side of the equation versus partaking in blaming others. I think that is the thing. If I were to pick one thing, Kirk, it would be that one. Because the moment that the parent starts saying it's other people's fault for my kid's current struggles, then the kid develops to be that type of a person as well.
Yeah.
And so when they graduate to college or they graduate to the next level and things aren't going their way, well, guess what? Either you shape up yourself or you're out. You're out. And the kids who've had the home environment, the good one that I just described, they tend to do a lot better later in life.
Right. It's interesting because I think a lot of people, as I set this up for you, would have thought, well, they got to watch a lot of soccer. They got to... You know, they got to go out to the park together to play as a family. And I do think all that stuff is important, right? If you don't watch the game, if you don't understand the professional game as a family, like your kid's probably not going to be interested enough to put in all that work to be super successful. But understanding that you can't just be a lawnmower and plow everything out of your kid's way and give them the easiest path to success, like easiest path to what you would call success, right? To being on that top Arsenal team or whatever. If you just plow the way by making a donation, it's not going to help your kid, right? Mm-hmm. If you bought your kid's way into college, I guarantee they're not going to be a good student and they're probably going to be overmatched when it comes to legitimate college courses, right? So, I mean, I love that. Me as a Marine, like mm-hmm. I love putting up challenges for my kids to get past, right? And I do think parents do a lot of legwork to try and get their kids, you know, well positioned. And I think it's well intentioned, but I also think there are some really severe unintended consequences when you just plow the road for them at every turn.
Yeah. And that's not, I'm not suggesting a parent be mean or anything like that.
Right.
Or, oh, hey, Johnny, you know, you were terrible in today's match. You know, I mean, there are some cultures that actually do that and it ends up benefiting the kid. But there's some cultures that do that and it's a detriment to their kid. So I try to not make recommendations along those lines. But I think the other thing is true, which is don't tell Johnny he had a great game if it was a disaster of a game. Yeah. Oh, it was, you did great, Johnny. Don't worry about it. You know, it's just the team's not that, like that does, in my opinion, do more harm than good. So if the kid had a bad performance, don't tell him he had a good performance, right? just let it be.
Yeah, let that breathe. Let him work through it. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's how all of us function as adults, is the world beats you down. And you somehow have to figure out how to deal with it. It is one of those things where it's like you get into the blame game so easy, right? What's the first thing after a loss that somebody says, oh, the refs were terrible. They were totally on the side of the other team. Or that other team was, you know, they had zero class. And it's like, yo, you really have to do that to try and pick up, like, your kid is going to cry about the game or, you know, losing the tournament final for an hour, and then guess what? Monday morning comes and they're back to school. They're back to doing whatever. Like, let them go through those natural cycles of ups and downs and work through that, because that's what's going to build some resilience in them. Yeah. Or you're going to train them to always externalize the blame, and then they're never going to actually try and correct their own deficiencies.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing.
No, totally. And you can be passionate as a parent on the sidelines and get involved in the game and all that. I think that's fine. It kind of builds atmosphere. It kind of feels like they care, right? The kid knows that they care, but there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And then, yeah, just if you can, I think just leave it at that, Kirk. If people cannot play the blame game, as you said, you're already 80% of your way there.
Yep. Getting back to the household influence, so I agree. Let that point rest there. There are cultures who understand football, and there are cultures that do not. And the predominant customer of U.S. youth soccer does not understand football. Again, it's no fault of their own. It's that the product here with MLS and USL, and it's not good. It's not good, and people don't watch it. People don't care. If you are from a Hispanic family, especially one from Mexico, and you watch Liga MX, guess what? Your kids are going to understand football a lot better, right? It happens everywhere across the U.S. In Arizona, there's a lot of clubs in what we call the West Valley, so like west side of Phoenix, that are predominantly Hispanic. They're kind of these rogue clubs. They play a very hard-nosed, very fast, very technical style of football. And when you play them, Gary, every single kid doesn't. I mean, you could be playing a 2010 squad that has, you know, somebody's little brother that was born in 2016 on it. And that 2016, when there's a free kick, is going to be standing over the ball to make sure you don't play fast, right? Doesn't matter that he's 9 years old. He knows because he's been watching, right? He's been watching and observing not only his own brother play or his sister or his dad play on the weekends, right? He's grown up with the game. How do you think we solve that here in the U.S.? Like, what do we do to, because that culture exists here, right? And it's largely just kind of pushed to the side and ignored. But like the greater soccer culture, what do we do here to help fix that?
$1 million question.
Yeah, seriously, right?
Literally, there is
a lot of money.
There is seven figures out there for anybody who can kind of have a solution for it.
Yeah,
I've been working on it for a while, and it's challenging. But look, it's common sense. The parents have to get up on the learning curve, and start as soon as you possibly can. So, what does that entail? That entails, well, step one. Watching a lot of games, watch professional soccer matches, watch the best in the world. Don't go watching MLS matches. Don't go watching nonsense. Go to the Champions League and watch Champions League religiously. If you want to watch a league period, go and watch Barcelona play. Go and watch Real Madrid play. I mean, the top of the food chain, watch that stuff religiously and try to kind of decipher or start deciphering and discerning what's going on. I think organically, it can get you somewhere fairly far if you watch hundreds and hundreds of matches. Step two, okay, what is actually going on? So now it's kind of like you need to put your kind of not become a practitioner, because I don't expect parents to become practitioners, but you kind of have to know a little bit about the knowledge that practitioners have. How do you develop a team, for instance? How do you train a team? So if a parent can kind of observe training sessions of a legitimate practitioner or see clips of training sessions from a legitimate practitioner, that takes you to a whole other level.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
The challenge is, of course, where do you find those clips and who are actually good resources? So how do you discern a charlatan practitioner from a legit practitioner? How do you discern whether this is a good training exercise being executed properly versus not a good training exercise being executed incorrectly?
Can I interject on that real point real quick? A good practitioner, you always say put up lots of video. A good practitioner puts up good plays from Sunday with a miss.
Yes.
They build all the way up to goal and the shot ends up being 2 feet outside the post. Right. Yeah. And if they build up and the shot is taken and the video cuts, get rid of that guy because he thinks the goal is the important part, right? Don't listen.
That last thing's so important, man. I never even thought of that one. I never even thought about that one. Yeah. If they cut the clip before the you see what happened to the shot, they think the goal is the most important thing. Wrong philosophy. You're right.
Bro, it's all over the place. Mm. The more you pay attention, the more you realize, like, these guys don't, like, their team builds out flawless. 14 passes all the way to the wing, right? Ball comes in, everybody crashing at the right time. You know, cut back to the penalty spot, boom. It's a little bit wide, or the keeper saves it. Nope, it cuts right as that guy takes the shot. Dude, it's slimy. It's slimy. Sorry. Man, I had to say something.
No, that's I'm gonna start using that one. I never even knew, maybe because I kind of drifted away from the youth game years ago, and I haven't been yet, my finger's not on the pulse of what everybody's doing nowadays that sort of stuff. That one's key. Yeah, but I mean, that would be step one. If practitioners have uploaded a whole bunch of video of their actual teams playing, that's important. And then obviously you have to assess whether they're doing little tricks like that, because they can maybe form a clip comprised of different plays from different games over different years, because that's how much time they needed to have a team. Magically randomly do something good. That's a red flag as well. It'd be good if you can see an entire match of a coach. That would be very telling.
There's so much insecurity though in posting entire matches, right? And it's, oh, they're gonna hear me on the sidelines when Timmy took that terrible first touch and I'm like, Timmy, you gotta be better, right? Parents are gonna hear that and they're gonna think I'm awful, or they're going to see when my team conceded 3 goals, not the 5 that we came back to win it with. Right. So I think there's so much insecurity, and it's tough. It's tough. We put a lot of video out for that reason, to try and prove, like, again, back to, we want the football to speak for itself. And like, any parent that looks at what happens in between the white lines and sees what we're doing is like, okay, this is a legit club. This is what we want. Right. If I have to sell you on, you know, our team water balloon party, then look, this is not the club for you. I'm sorry. You're going to hate it here. Right. The video thing is super important.
It's key. Key, man. It's absolutely key. So that's one key filter. If they don't have that, out the window you go. I'm sorry. I mean, there might be an exception out there or two, a coach who's like, fuck all this social media. Oh, sorry. Yeah. screw all this social media stuff and doing all this stuff. Like, I'm just a coach. I want to be a coach and I don't want to do any of that stuff. There might be an exception out there who's exceptional, but if you're looking for a mentor or guidance, like, you need this evidence out there.
Absolutely.
And the other thing I would mention is, if you ever meet this person, or they are your coach, even more important, if they are your coach currently, somebody who's exceptional at what they do, in my experience, is open to questions and open to bombard, you know, going down the rabbit hole with you. Because when you're really good at something, you're not intimidated. You're not fearful of opening the kimono. You're actually inviting because you want to share your knowledge. You want to share. You're interested in what I have to think. Well, let me tell you. Everything. I will sit there 3 hours with you. Sorry, coaches out there, I know you don't have time to do this, of course. And parents, they don't want to sit 3 hours with you, but you can sense it, in my opinion, as a human who's kind of putting up a shield and doesn't really want to talk and is evasive, versus the person who's like, okay, cool, let's talk, Jackie. What do you want to know? I have reasons and rationale for all of my decisions for the team and all of my decisions for all of my players. Let's have at it.
Yeah, I feel like that openness is a major sign that, like, hey, things are good here. This, you can trust this person. And oftentimes the best in the world will tell you when they don't know.
Mm-hmm, right? Correct.
So I work with a lot of surgeons. Yeah, and the mark of a good surgeon is when he's like, hey, look, I'm primarily spine. Like, I'm an orthopedic spine surgeon. I've done hips before, but like, you should really talk to this guy over here, because he's the hip expert, not me, right? I'm always like, yep, that's the guy. Like, don't talk about things you don't know about. You're not a true expert. But that's it. I mean, that's it, man. it's not, that's just not surgery. That's not just football. That's everything in life right now. I feel like there's charlatans everywhere, but
for sure. And that's why, sorry to interrupt. And that's why,
no, go for it.
No, that's why, parents of players who they themselves were former professionals and, yeah, and played the game at a very high level have such a huge advantage over non-professionals or non-players even. I mean, if you never played the game, you know, you're starting from ground zero, but a former professional player who's a parent, they're aware of all this sort of stuff, you know, yeah, and they're well equipped for discerning charlatan from somebody who actually knows what they're doing. And they know so many of the challenges, obviously. And to boot, they can train their kid themselves. They can be the personal trainer of their kid,
yeah,
in many respects and mentor. So that's why you see so many of their kids become professionals themselves. I mean, yeah, there is a bit of nepotism involved, of course, that exists everywhere. But the kid still has to be good enough above a certain threshold. Otherwise, right, like right, you aren't going to make it anyway. And so that's been one of my goals, right, Kirk, is to try to help players or parents who have never played or have played but not at a very high level to catch up. You're never really going to close the gap, but you could close the gap sufficiently enough so that your kid isn't crippled.
Man, this is such an important point, Gary, because most of us grew up in soccer environments that, most of us in the U.S., I'm saying, grew up in soccer environments that weren't fully fleshed out yet, right? When I was growing up, this kind of club atmosphere did not exist, right? It was local rec leagues. You know, the really good athletes would be playing club soccer, but that was it, right? And that was in Los Angeles, so parents, it's through no fault of your own, really, that you don't know, because we, like, none of us grew up with this the way we grew up with basketball or baseball or football. You do have to have some humility and just admit, like, you know what? I do need to learn a little bit. And I have to take ownership for setting the right culture. I don't want to keep you too long, Gary, so we'll move on. But this last piece about how do players and parents find good resources to use for their kids. I think it's much simpler than most people make it out to be. Oh, I got to find somebody that's playing in college to train my kid. My kids, Gary, are working through your masterclass. They freaking love it. So every day they're up, you know, doing a new lesson, and then they ride down to racquetball courts that are close to my house, and they train against the wall, right? An hour a day minimum. I would love for you to give the parents kind of like an overview of what that is and what they can expect from that, both for them and for their, like, how that fits this bill of, like, you can understand the game better if you do this.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the opportunity, Kirk. I think there are a lot of folks out there who could be good mentors and provide good resources or direct you to good resources. I've just embarked on this challenge of trying to solve this problem of parent education as best as possible. And so over the course of many years, we developed this thing online where we teach them many of the things that we've been discussing today. We start off by kind of laying out the framework of the five components of player development and where they fit in to those five components. So they are the parent, they are the household environment. And of course, the kids need to get better technically, because they're not going to get better technically just by going to their club training sessions. If the club trains two times a week, at three, even three times a week, a couple hours a day, that's not sufficient even remotely. The kids need to be playing on their own. And so naturally, the parent kind of has to assume that responsibility in many circumstances. And so the parent should be asking themselves, well, what do I have them do? You know, like, I don't even know, how should they be trained? So the class online shows them a whole bunch of these exercises that the kids can do on their own. And a lot of it is centered on the wall. So a lot of wall exercises that are translatable to the real game. So I'll give people an extreme example. If your kid is out there juggling all the time, every day, good for them. Great for them. Awesome. It does some helpful things, but that's not going to make them a good player or a great player, because
the great Johan Cruyff quote, right?
Correct.
Juggle 1,000 times. Now you can join the circus.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the kid's not going to be juggling in the game. Yeah. This is just the reality. So what does a player do in the game? Those are the sorts of activities and exercises that we demonstrate to the parents and have the parents, you know, relay that information to their kids or frankly, even become their kid's personal trainer if the kid is open to that, right? Because I'm sure some kids aren't open to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, you know, aside from the technical stuff, we try to develop the eye of the parent themselves to be able to discern the things that are happening in a football match, right? So how do you build out of the back? You know, how do you transition into the midfield? How do you attack? That way, when they're watching a professional game, they have a more keen eye, a higher level of discernment to decipher what is actually going on and then communicate with their child, you know, in that sort, not as a teacher-child relationship, but in passing, you know, oh, look, did you see how they build out of the back? Oh, are you seeing the winger losing his man right now? Yeah. Like, you're able to point out things to your kid that you may not otherwise even be remotely aware of is actually happening in the game. So you can mentor them with things that aren't with the ball as well. And then just an overall philosophy, because this will help you also discern the capabilities of your current coach in many respects too.
Absolutely.
It's like, hey, is my kid on a team with a coach that is doing things well, not well, or somewhere in between? Which is critical for when it comes time to saying, hey, should I look for another club or should I stay here?
Yeah.
So all that stuff kind of rolled up into one is what's on display there. We've gotten a lot of good testimonials, but the parents have to assume now it's on them, right? They have to assume the responsibility of actually executing stuff and not like many of these online courses, you go and you click around, you look at some things, and then it just falls by the wayside and nothing ever comes of it. So parents, you're going to have to do your homework too.
Yeah, absolutely. God, this was awesome, Gary. Can't thank you enough for joining. Where can people find all this information? Where can they find you? Gary's got a great podcast of his own that's been going on much longer than this one. We're on episode 3 here, and I think you're on like 350 or something like that. So there's a lot of content for parents to educate themselves, but let's point them in the right direction here.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to get introduced to us and who we are and get to know us kind of from a remote perspective is to listen to our voices and hear how authentic we are and is to go to the podcast, right? So just search 343 podcast and that's, you know, the word four, the number four all spelled out. So it's the number 3. FOUR, the number 3 podcast. We're on YouTube, so you can actually see our faces as well and be a better judge of our character and whether we're being authentic or kind of being slimy and salesy or whatever. Or you can just go to Apple Podcasts and, you know, subscribe there and give us a listen. We publish once a week. And within the podcast, obviously, we're making the audience aware of the products and services like the one we just described there. So if you want to go directly there, the parent education platform, it's 343masterclass.com.
Awesome. If you're looking for an episode to start with parents, God, so many are so good. For me though, the ones that got me, Gary, was your initial interview with Joe Campos up in Seattle, where he started Eagle Claw. That for me, when I listened to that, I was like, I can do this myself. I don't need anybody else. Right. And then John Kokoris, the first time that he was on, just like the different view, like it's okay to be different. It's okay to be intense and maybe even a little extreme. Like, in fact, it's good to be that way. So if you guys go back, those are, I think, in the hundreds. But anyway.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, man. That was years and years and years ago. Wow. Amazing that it was memorable. But, I want to apologize in advance, parents, because I drop F-bombs every other sentence on the podcast. I've been very professional on this one. And frankly speaking, if sometimes we go off on tangents and I have very strong opinions on things that are tangential to soccer. So I hope those sorts of things, you know, don't turn you off, but rather maybe you can look at them as, I don't know, a signal that I'm just being who I am and, you know, let the chips fall where they fall, you know?
People don't have to love everything. That's something that we say a lot now with PFA, especially in Flagstaff. It's like, we're not going to be everything to everybody. Mm-hmm. We're not going to try that. Like, we're going to be who we are. We're going to attract who we do. And yeah, let the chips fall where they may. But
all right, brother.
A good place to end. Gary, thanks so much for coming on. Everybody go check out everything that 343 is doing, because it's the it's a good way to find a lot of success.
Appreciate you, Kirk. Thanks. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers, everyone, and keep building.